This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Can't get my hands on enough science fiction. You know what's funny? Footy geeks. They don't get called geeks.
No.
They just get called fans.
Oh, okay, but they're definitely
geeks. Isn't that interesting? Because they're geeks when you think about it.
They're obsessed about the same
thing. They are obsessed. They're geeks.
For 4 or 5 months of the year.
I can't wait to bring this up with my brother. My brother is a massive sports nut, and he likes to think that he is nothing like me with my weird geekiness, and I'm always like, we are very alike. We just geek out about different things.
You've got to obsess over something, you know?
That's it. Man children out there, and there are women out there who are, you know, the same. Woman girl just sounds weird, doesn't it?
It does sound.
But the equivalent does exist. Those people do exist in geek culture. But then I also know a lot of geeks who love to cosplay and love to get into all this stuff. Yes, men are sometimes objectified as well, but if someone is trying to point out when a woman is objectified, then that's a way to kind of shut them down and try to stop them from being able to talk about that by trying to change the subject. Yep. And people should be able to just openly have this discussion. And also, look, I won't go into detail here, but there's a lot of research and textual analyses looking at how women are objectified compared to how men are objectified. A lot of the time, men and women are both objectified according to how men want to see them.
Geek Girl Speak. It's 2014. It's time for Geek Girl Speak. It's all about geek girls, the ladies of the nerd. What it's like to be a geek, what do we think, and much, much more, with special guests, special interviews, and very special podcast, Geek Girl Speak. Because we're listening, and you're talking, and we're doing it for you. Geek Girl Speak. Ladies of the Nerd, only on Sci-Fi and Scream, only on Joy 94.9.
This is Sonia with Sci-Fi and Scream, or should I say Geek Girl Speak? Exclamation mark, that's what it's called. I want to welcome Dr. Emma Beddoes to the studio to the special podcast where we're looking at women and girls in popular culture, how the media represents them, fans, fangirls, cosplayers, gamers, you know, the whole expansive universe pretty much. And welcome to our special podcast, Geek Girl Speak. Emma.
Thanks for having
Dr.
me.
Dr. Emma.
Jeez, we're covering everything. Are women represented, women in popular culture, women in geek culture, everything.
Well, you have to do it all by yourself.
I can do it.
Starting from now.
All right, go.
Who are you?
All right, who am I? Yeah, so I mean, as you said, I'm Dr. Emma Beddoes. So,
well, I've got your bio here if you want me to read it.
Oh, no. I'm sure I can. I should be able to remember what I do. So I'm a co-host for Watch Your Podcast. I am also a teacher of media studies and popular culture, writer and a blogger. I have a new blog coming out very soon called Geek Maven, which is all about...
Geek what, sorry?
Geek Maven, which is all about girl geeks. M-A-V-E-N.
Oh, like... I don't know what that means.
Maven, yeah. Like, well, Raven? See, that's the thing. Maven, Maven means like sort of a specialist or an expert in something.
Okay.
I like to think of myself as a professional geek because my doctorate is actually all about popular culture and fans and all that kind of thing.
I can't afford to pay you though.
No, that's okay.
It's not like
that's
cricket
all right. You can
rugby.
Pay me in geek cred. That's okay. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've got this blog coming out really cool. soon, which is going to be all about. And I thought Maven sounded a little bit like a female pronoun as well.
It
so
does.
I just like the sound of it, Geek yeah. Maven. So yeah, Geek Maven is launching soon, and that's going to be a blog all about sort of girl geeks and a space for female geeks to come and talk about things that are relevant to them and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So involved in all of the geekery stuff happening around Melbourne.
Very involved.
And of course I've been involved with Sci-Fi and Squeam. This awesome program at Joy 94.9. And yeah, just been doing lots of different things.
One of the things I must admit that you were involved in recently, and that's Homebrew Vampire Bullets.
Yes.
Doing an article in there for their second anthology that came out this March, just gone. Now, what was that experience like?
That was really good. So I was approached by Garth, who is the editor.
He's the god king.
He sits on high above.
He does. Above his long tresses.
Yeah.
And his tower of Aussie iconic
geekness.
I don't
know. Yeah, yep. but he
but like Mad Max.
Yes, yeah. Yep. So he approached me and basically said, "Hey, do you want to write a piece on misogyny in geek culture?" And I was like, "Ooh, yes, I can do that." This was a lot of fun. I have to say, it's really great work working prominently just with Garth. But the impression I get is that the whole team involved at Homebrew Vampire Bullets are very, very, very supportive of what I wanted to write about. I mean, it was actually their idea in the first place. They kind of said, "Do you want to take this topic?" And I said, "Yes," which was fantastic. So the article itself is about misogyny, not so much in the representation of women in popular culture, but within geek culture itself, so amongst the fans. Because I consider myself a fangirl, it was actually kind of difficult to write about because I love fans. I love the geek community. I'm a part of it. But at the same time, I can also recognize that there is this problem.
I guess sometimes if you're immersed in it, you don't see it, or you shrug it off and go, that's just normal.
Yeah.
And it becomes a normalized part of the furniture where, oh, well, you know, I'm a teacup, so people will spill me occasionally. That's weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so I tried in the article focus on actually the rhetorical devices that people use to try and stop people from talking about misogyny. So basically when someone in the geek community tries to bring something up, tries to say, "Oh, hang on, that joke's not really funny," or, you know, "The way that woman is represented seems really sexist." I wanted to talk about the things people do to try and shut people down, to try and stop them from talking about it, because I feel that it's really important that we talk about these things openly. I'm not saying it's completely rampant and that it's everywhere and that it's happening all the time, but what I'm saying is when it does happen, people should be free to be able to say, this isn't right.
And validity and things like that?
Yeah. Well, what do you mean specifically?
I mean, like, if, when you do have an opinion about something and you say, oh, look, I don't really fancy the way that Scarlett Johansson's looking on the billboard for the new Captain America Winter Soldier, that's been photoshopped. And when I look at the male characters next to her, they haven't been photoshopped. And, you know, she's just, her body shape is just, I'm not sure what the word is, it, but disproportionate to...
Sure.
Herself. Yeah. I mean, and people say, oh, no, look, it's a comic character. What are you worried about?
Well, the funny thing is one of the devices that I talk about is when people say, oh, but men are objectified too, as a response when you try to talk about the objectification of women. And there's a few problems with that. The first one is, yes, men are sometimes objectified as well, but when if someone is trying to point out when a woman is objectified, then that's a way to kind of shut them down and try to stop them from being able to talk about that by trying to change the subject.
Yep.
And people should be able to just openly have this discussion. And also, look, I won't go into detail here, but there's a lot of research and textual analyses looking at how women are objectified compared to how men are objectified. And a lot of the time, men and women are both objectified according to how men want to see them. So it's not like, do you know what I mean? Like,
I know,
men are objectified
there's a lot of male
in a way,
creators historically as well.
Yeah, and a lot of male like comic book characters, for example, look the way men ideally want to look. And the female comic book characters don't look the way women ideally want to look. It's how men want women to ideally look.
Or men think they would like to look as well.
And again, I'm not saying that this is in every comic and it's happening all the time, but it does happen and it is a bit of a problem. And I think I'm not 100% sure what the solution is, because this problem has deep cultural roots. So there isn't just like a quick fix solution.
No.
But basically what I was trying to say in my article is, hey, at least at a community level, the geeks, my experience of the geek community is that it's very open and welcoming and friendly and diverse. And it doesn't seem like the kind of community that would be shutting people down. Yet sometimes it does happen.
It does
happen.
People
try to talk about things and they get shut down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, but I'm trying to suggest in the article that because Aussies have a very egalitarian nature, that this could be the perfect setting to try and turn this around, to try and actually channel that sense of egalitarianism into giving people the freedom to talk about what needs to be talked about and not sort of shutting people down and this sort of thought policing that occurs. Yeah, so I just felt like it was something important to talk about, and Garth liked it. And also I have to just say, they paired me with an illustrator named Kate Moon.
Yes, she's fantastic.
Yeah, yep. Amazing. And the piece she did for it was just awesome. So she's such a talented illustrator.
And to describe the piece, it's like a cubby house and a tree house, and it's a female depicted young girl as a Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman. It's a great piece.
And there's a bunch of sort of like child versions of like the Hulk and Spider-Man hiding in the tree house.
Oh, that's
and
it right.
says
yep.
and it says no girls allowed on the front, and Wonder Woman sort of standing there with their arms crossed like and it's very cute. I really liked it. But yeah, this Homebrew Vampire Bullets is, I just to plug it some more, I really think it's an awesome publication. I love the way that they're blending, you know, like traditional comics and things that geeks like to consume with social, cultural and political
and
commentary.
And Australian political commentary
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly, with a local focus.
Yeah, very distinctive.
Yeah, I've never really seen a publication quite like this. And even just for me as an author, I've never seen my work presented that way with an illustration with it and everything. Yeah. And I was like, this is really cool.
Yeah, no, he's got some fantastic ideas, and he's already working on number 3. I don't know where he gets the time.
Yeah.
He's a very busy man. Mm-hmm. But also, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there has been anything quite like this for Australian culturally and pop culture, particularly comics. But if there is, I'm sure that someone may know about that. So you can always get in touch with us for Sci-Fi and Scream, certainly. But also, I think there's Picatia Press, and he does a lot of research, that particular comics publisher based originally in New Zealand. They've been doing a lot of Australiana coverage and looking back at Australian comics, and he's republishing some stuff from the way back from the 20s.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Just going off on a tangent.
No.
Something that you did mention in that article was a Guardian article. Don't know the date of it, but it was by Damien Waller, and he talks about geek men as man boys, and that, it's a horrible word, but immaturity, I suppose, of the male geek. Do you think that's got anything to do with the way what we've been talking about?
So I just have to say that article was something that I was citing in a particular part of the article that I wrote. And I sort of made a point of saying that I don't particularly agree with everything that he's saying. But only because, like, he sort of he equates collecting toys as prolonging your adolescence or childhood into adulthood. And I was kind of like, as a collector,
yes,
I kind of take issue
with
that.
It's an interesting point, though.
Oh, it is an interesting point. You know, but obviously, I don't consider myself as avoiding adulthood or prolonging my adolescence or childhood.
Oh, no.
So I sort of don't really... Yeah, I don't know. Look, he made some good points. I think where he was... The best points he made was about the way male characters are represented in popular culture, especially in, you know, the geek genres like fantasy and science fiction and superhero movies, which was what he was specifically talking about. They are often portrayed as sort of these childlike idealizations of what men and boys will be. They're marketed to adults rather than to children, but they really are based on, you know, these childlike sort of narratives. I guess the thing is, even though that's the case, a lot of these superhero narratives actually have a very purposeful moral story underlying them. So even though, like, for example, Iron Man is essentially, you know, a big boy with his toys playing with all his stuff and living the bachelor life and, you know,
but
doing all that kind
American
of stuff.
It's also about American capitalism, and it's about
the
growth of the American dream and all those things too.
Exactly. So it is, these narratives do still reflect meaningfully on culture. So I feel that, I felt that what he was saying... He did generalize a little. Yeah, I don't know. He had some good points, but in some cases he was perhaps generalizing somewhat.
It does happen.
I don't know.
I think perhaps the alternative would be, the opposite of that for females would be, what if maybe, just maybe, Disney princesses were on the same scale as far as films and merchandise as superhero films? If yeah, there was the absolute opposite of that, we could probably say, well, that's doing the same thing to girls.
Yeah, but then you think
isn't
about
that
like,
about collecting dolls?
But then you think about how some of like the fan culture, particularly in Japan, where it's a big thing for a lot of like Japanese girls to kind of dress up the Lolitas.
The little Lolitas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Especially in, you know, the Harajuku district. There is sort of the female equivalent of that happening. And I guess it would be interesting to
imagine
look at
if that went as far as, you know, same sort of male culture.
And I think it maybe almost does in Japan, not so much in Western culture. But I think the other thing with that is that that's also assuming that in terms of what women enjoy engaging with in popular culture, that for women it has to be more like fairies and princesses and Barbies and whatever. Yeah. When the truth is that there are a lot of geek girls that also love, you know, the superhero comics and science fiction and all that kind of stuff. You know, so there are also, there are also female collectors and girls who are cosplaying into their 30s and 40s. And, you know, I can
yeah, I was on a tram, I think it was for Armageddon. And there was a woman way into her 40s and she was dressed as an anime character.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd put a lot of thought into it. She looked exactly like. And it was just amazing. But there was no barriers to that. She was talking to people 20 years younger than herself and engaging with them, and there were little kids asking her questions, and she was asking them what they dressed as, and the whole barriers and everything was sort of broken down, and that always feels really positive. It's something that I guess you only get in sports culture in Australia.
Well, that's another thing, you know, when it comes to sports culture, we're perfectly accepting when we see fans paint their faces and wear all these crazy colours and outfits
and
we're just like, oh yeah, you know, true Aussies or whatever.
But
when we see fans do that, there's a lot of, you know,
weirdo.
They just never grew out of their childhood or whatever.
Mm.
And I think there's a difference between prolonging your adolescence and basically existing as a man child or a woman girl, I don't know, whatever the equivalent is, and being a mature adult but giving yourself permission to have fun and enjoy the things that you love.
And who decides these things anyway?
And those other people, they do exist.
Yeah.
There are man children out there, and there are women out there who are, you know, the same. Woman girl just sounds weird, doesn't it?
It does sound.
But the equivalent does exist. Those people do exist in geek culture. But then I also know a lot of geeks who love to cosplay and love to get into all this stuff. And they're also, you know, fully functioning adults in society. They have full-time jobs. They have families, kids, husbands, wives, whatever, and they're doing whatever they're doing. So
pay their taxes, get off.
Yeah, exactly. There's a mix of those two kinds.
Yeah, it's just interesting that sports, that makes it okay and
I know,
gives it that green light. But if you're a cosplayer, and we talked to some cosplayers for this special podcast and these particular shows for Geek Girl Speak, we'll be talking to Kirsty Sculler.
Yes.
From New Game Plus, apart from other things. Of course, she's, I'd say, maybe professional cosplayer. She certainly has got a long and fantastic background in it and knowledge and so on, and wisdom. Always got the wisdom there.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also spoken to fangirls who do get very serious about their cosplay. Mm. And one young woman, Jessica Meads, or JM Cosplay, I think it was Channel 9 or Channel 10, I can always edit this out, she was approached to do Jon Snow from Game of Thrones. So she's a cosplayer. She crosses genders with her cosplay. It's cosplay. And the reactions she gets is it fascinating.
Mm.
But it's becoming mainstream, which I want to ask you about, this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Geek chic is in vogue, you said in that article.
Yep.
What do you think of that? Do you think that's a good thing? And for women, girls, girl women?
Well, personally, I have no problem with geek culture becoming mainstream. And as far as girl geeks are concerned, I do think that the mainstreaming of geek culture has made this whole scene more accessible to women. Because I do think in the past that a lot of women and girls have felt like they can't be out as geeks and that it's kind of a boys' club. And I feel that the mainstreaming of it has made it much more accessible. In terms of just the mainstreaming in general, it's funny because so many geeks get so antsy about this. They hate the mainstream. They're like, they're stealing our culture.
And the fake geek girl phenomenon. Or I don't know if it's a phenomenon, but
sorry. It just makes me so angry.
The question.
No, that's okay. Yeah, look, but that ties into the whole mainstreaming of it, because essentially people that get angry about the mainstreaming of culture, mainstreaming of geek culture, I feel that they are taking an elitist view where they feel like they have the right to say, this is what is officially part of geek culture and this is what is officially not. And those people that pick on women and, you know, calling them fake geek girls, that's exactly what they're doing. The truth is, nobody has a right to do that. Nobody has a right to tell someone, you don't know enough about this, or you don't look enough like this, or you don't read enough of this, or watch enough of this, or this kind of thing, for you to call yourself a geek, or for you to be at this con, or for you to be dressed up. That's bullshit. And that's not like...
I think the only area that you can say, look, truly you don't know enough about something if you don't, is brain surgery or taking an appendix out. It helps to know what you're doing.
And the thing is, if you're a geek and you're a fan of something, that doesn't mean you don't own it. You can't tell other people that they're not allowed to start reading it and watching it. And as far as I'm concerned, like, I don't understand why people resist it. Wouldn't we want to spread the love?
We should be sharing it.
Exactly. We know how awesome this stuff is. Yeah. And the fact is, the more people get into this, the more it financially supports the creators, actors and writers that we love.
And then, of course, your dreams, your fantasies, the stuff where you would stare out the window and daydream about, you can actually maybe one day make some sort of sustainable existence out of, and also share that with your friends who are the same sort of loons. Everybody said, you know, you'll never get a job doing that.
I know that some people feel like, as a geek, they identify as being kind of the outcast or the misfit. You know, they didn't kind of fit in with everyone else at high school. I certainly understand that feeling. And so they're resistant to the mainstream coming in and sort of co-opting their culture. But the truth is, like, at the end of the day, when it comes to your social gatherings and when you have parties or birthdays or whatever, you still just can invite the same geeks that you know and feel comfortable with. This isn't going to change your life. It just means that
what about the initiations? No, I'm just kidding.
Are there initiations?
Maybe
I don't
there
know.
Should be. I don't
I've
know.
Never really been initiated. And I,
well,
I
haven't
actually,
you?
I actually really loathe the idea of geeks having to be initiated, because it just feeds into the whole,
I know,
there's a certain level of things you need to know and understand. Like, for example, because there's different kind of geeks, right? Like on the Watcher podcast, the guy guys talk a lot about comics because that's their thing. I'm not into superhero comics at all. I haven't read any of them, and they're like, that's okay, you're a different kind of geek, you were not the same kind of geek. And they're never like, oh, how can you call yourself, you know, whatever, because you don't know this. You know, they're sort of shocked that I haven't read this comic or don't know about this character. But then on the other hand, like, I was talking to them about an Isaac Asimov novel that I was reading, and they didn't know who Isaac Asimov was.
Wow, okay.
And I was like, come on, guys.
That's
so
hard.
So there's different kinds of geeks.
I know. I mean, the thing with doing this podcast and doing Sci-Fi and Squeam in general is I've had to educate myself and all the geeks.
Yeah.
And it's been very
interesting. And it's hard because there's a lot. Because there's subcultures within geek culture.
I've been attacked as well. I've been told, oh, no, that's not correct. And no, you can't do that. And
that's the thing with geeks.
And horror as well, like being told, well, horror isn't really, you can't really geek out to horror. You can geek out to horror. There are horror geeks now.
Of course you can.
You can do anything. I mean, we had a chat to Kendall Cronkite, one of the few women that, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but one of the few women who've made it to very high status in DreamWorks animation over in the US. Anyway, she was over here for the DreamWorks exhibition at Acme that's on all winter. And she was saying, you know, even though she's one of the few women, she doesn't see it like that. It's she's working in an environment that she really loves. Everybody works together. They're all geeked out together. Mm. And that gives them that commonality. And they just love what they're doing. And then when I asked her what her thing that she's guilty, her geek guilty pleasure, and what does she geek out to, and I was quite shocked when she told me sewing machines. I mean, she's this amazing animator, she loves comics, she's got this history. It was sewing machines.
Well, the whole craft scene
so there you
is
go.
Really taking off at the moment.
So there's craft geeks.
Well, that's the thing. You can
technically,
I mean, because now we're getting into the whole difference between what's a nerd and what's a geek. But I think technically you can be a geek of anything. It's just whatever you really become really passionate and obsessed about and fixated on. You know, I think you can be a geek of anything. But I mean, but that being said, but generally when someone says geek, people do typically think of pop culture geek.
They will,
You know, and that's just because, I mean, people seem to really get into that kind of stuff. And
It's probably the most mainstream and most actually the most acceptable
now.
You
know what's funny? Footy geeks. They don't get called geeks.
No.
They just get called fans.
Oh, okay. But they're definitely
isn't that
geeks.
Interesting? Because they're geeks when you think about it.
They're obsessed about the same
thing. They are obsessed. They're geeks.
For 4 or 5 months of the year.
I can't wait to bring this up with my brother. My brother is a massive sports nut and he likes to think that he is nothing like me with my weird geekiness. And I'm always like, we are very alike.
We
just geek out about different things.
You've got to obsess over something, you know.
That's it.
It could be licking light switches, but instead it's not. It's footy.
It's young guys running around in tight shorts, you know, wrestling over a slippery ball or,
Was that at Supernova or what?
Or footy. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And those crazy, stupid wigs they wear. Oh, sorry to all the sports geeks out there. You're probably not listening anyway.
Yeah. No, but that's okay because we feel you. We get it. Yeah. We geek out about something else, but we understand.
It'd be great
the
if they wore capes while they played. I'd watch, actually, if they started wearing capes and things like that.
Yes. So would I.
I'd only watch once.
Let's get on to the AFL and
I'd watch once and then I'd get bored probably.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
All right, and move on to my obsession, which has to be Neil deGrasse Tyson at the moment.
Ah, you're watching Cosmos?
Yeah, I'm loving it.
Isn't it amazing? He blows my mind every episode. I'm just like, oh, how can we go deeper into the atom? I don't get it. Oh, this is
insane.
You can. I know, but
that's the thing.
Science.
It's science.
It's amazing.
Science, geek science is probably the ultimate geek if you think about it, because it goes for it goes forever.
Yeah. Well, and that's true. And a lot of science fiction
is
based on science. Yeah. And so, there's a direct connection there.
And would you call yourself more of a sci-fi geek then?
Than what?
I mean, than a comics geek or
absolutely
culture
yeah
geek.
I thought about it because I was thinking about how the guys in the podcast are comic book geeks, and I thought, well, they're into a specific like platform, they're into like comic books specifically, and I thought, I'm not into a particular platform because I do read some comics, but I also really like movies and TV shows, and I realized I'm a genre geek. I really like sci-fi
now.
Yeah, so I'm a sci-fi geek, but that's what I'm saying, like if I had to sort of figure out what's the main classification for what kind of geek I am, it's that there's a particular genre that I really like, and I like it across any kind of platform or anything. So I can't get my hands on enough science fiction. And I do
it's
enjoy
something
some...
that you return to then.
Exactly.
Obviously.
It's something that I'm constantly returned to. And obviously I dabble in like some sort of supernatural fantasy stuff, whatever. But generally speaking, science fiction is what really gets me. I love it.
I think I'm like that with horror.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I love science fiction and I tend to like the more horrifying aspects of science fiction,
John Carpenter
very
style
out there, that sort of stuff. But when it comes down to it, if someone said, which boat are you going to jump into, I'm going to jump into the one that
you're going to jump into the one with the axe murderers and
the
chainsaws and
exactly I'm pinning my bits
and I'm going to jump into the one with rockets that can just take us out of the boat and straight up to the
moon. That's really smart.
I think my boat's probably better.
Oh, you see, here we go.
This is the elitism
we
talked about.
Exactly.
All the guys on the podcast are going to be with people in capes who have superpowers, so they're going to be really in the best situation.
They are.
Yeah.
Now, just looking at just relevance. Now, I mean, one of these days it would be great if there was no such thing, I guess, as the gender differences.
Sure.
You know, what do you think? Do you think it is still, do you think it's necessary to distinguish between the genders in popular culture and media? Or?
Well, I think this is, it's a difficult one to answer. On one hand, I feel that if we talk too much about gender, then it actually makes gender an issue when it doesn't need to be. So, you know, I have a lot of male and female geek friends and we share that common interest and to a certain extent gender doesn't matter. Then on the other hand, I am a feminist and I do believe that we have not yet reached equality. I feel that we still have a ways to go. And as a sort of microcosm of culture generally, this is reflected in geek culture. So I feel that sometimes it is necessary to talk about, you know, female issues specifically. Sometimes I think that it's important to have spaces where girl geeks can kind of get together and sort of, you know, share their interests and talk about what's important to them. Because I don't feel that we have equality yet. But yeah, it's a balancing act. Do you know what I mean? Because like I said, you don't want to focus too much on gender all the time. I think it's important that guys and girls and transgender people, we all just get along.
We have more in common, I guess that's the saying, than we don't.
That's it. Yeah, we do. But I mean, like for example, the Geek Maven blog, it's certainly not no boys allowed. Like guys can get onto the blog and comment and share things on whatever. That's totally fine. And I know some people feel like, well, why do you need to create a space for girl geeks at all? Like, why isn't there spaces for male geeks? And that's because typically geek culture is dominated by men. And that's the reason that it's called feminism and not masculinism. Because when it comes to inequality, it is women who have typically been, who have had less rights and who have been discriminated against. So we need to raise women's rights in order for equality to be achieved. And I feel like particularly in geek culture, it's really good at the moment. There's a lot of really open girl geeks and you know, they don't feel that they're discriminated against at all, and they're just a part of the culture. In the scope of things, like over the course of all of geek culture for as long as this has existed, this is relatively recent that women have been accepted into this culture in the grand scheme of things. So most people in my generation will feel like for their whole life it's never been an issue, but I'm talking about in the grand scheme of things. Again, it's a bit of both. There's no sort of clear answer. I would certainly hate it if everything was divided between the sexes and it was like, you know, oh, you know, women need to always have like a special little spot for them or a special comic for them or a special movie for them. I don't think that's the way it should be. I think that we should just learn to be, you know, respectful to all genders regardless. But at the moment, I think that it's still necessary for women to feel like if they need it, they do have sort of a space and an outlet and a voice to talk about.
It's just another perspective and another niche of a group that traditionally hasn't had such a dominant, you know, force is not the right word, but influence in the pop culture and pop media.
Yeah.
And I think it's just taking time. There's still not enough female directors, let alone fully rounded characters and lead roles, and why we don't have more superhero females having their films made. I mean, they're going to be doing Wonder Woman finally, but in what, you know, there's going to be a lot of discussion about that, of course, tearing that apart, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Or deconstructing, I think is the word.
And
which is fair enough, because it's like anything that has to gather that momentum, and then we can feel comfortable.
That's the word. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Like, we're still at a point where we're just gathering momentum. And I feel like we are close to a point where it will be quite equal, and there won't really be a need
to discuss these issues
at all anymore. Which would be
ideal.
Great. That's exactly. That's
but
what,
unfortunately,
that's what
an ideal world doesn't exist. So stuff does happen. Things come back.
That's right. And even though we've got, you know, female characters in these genres, when you look at the representation of female characters,
and the people making them,
we still have a long way to go.
We really do.
Like, as I said in the article, the objectification of women in popular culture has reached an untenable level. It has got to the point where it's just gratuitous and it's outrageous. There are exceptions to the rule. There always are. Because I know whenever someone makes this argument, everyone goes, oh, but what about this and what about that? And it's like, you get it. There are exceptions. There are some really great, strong female characters, but unfortunately there's too many female characters that are still highly objectified, they're sexualized.
I guess at the end of the day, when you turn on your mainstream commercial radio or television station or open your mainstream paper, what are you seeing? You're still seeing the mainstream. You're still seeing what's acceptable.
Yeah.
And what's acceptable is decided by a minority, of course. And it has been for a long time, but still that can change.
Yeah, it's still very patriarchal and it's still very heteronormative. Like,
I was going to get to that
topic. In terms of, you know, gay and lesbian and transgender issues, we are like making progress. Same with female issues. You know, I feel like we are making progress, but we're still not quite there yet.
I mean, I don't know if you saw online, I posted something about Gamer X, which is a gamer, G-A-Y-M-E-R, of course, a convention in San Francisco. Of course, it's San Francisco, the hub of equality different, you know, things and gender diversity. They're doing their very last convention. They're going to put a stop to it. The last one's July 11th, 12th and 13th, I believe.
So why are they
closing up shop? They just don't think there's a necessity for it anymore, which is really interesting.
Good.
Which is positive.
That's a really positive thing.
Because it's kind of like, you know, it kind of, you want that identity to keep going as a convention. It would be nice, but if they feel that it's at that time, because in 2 years, they've only been around, this will be their third one, but in 2 years, and this is really positive, in 2 years, they've seen such a great leaps and bounds of, you know, progress.
Yeah.
That they feel it may not be required. That's great.
That's fantastic. That's one of those things. Look, it is kind of...
So we'll soon become... Maybe by the time this podcast is done, we won't need it.
Maybe. You know, we can live in hope. But no, that is kind of like a... How do you... It's kind of sweet and sour. Like
bittersweet, yeah.
That's a word. I'm like, sweet and sour. That's a flavouring. Bittersweet, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, because it's kind of sad, because I can imagine that people would have really bonded at that convention.
Because they were like a really great advocacy too. Yeah. You know, and from coming all, you know, being all the way on the other side, almost on the other side of the world from America, I guess, being in Australia, there wasn't until recent times something similar to that. Mm. And with PAX arriving last year, they did have a more diverse, you know, take on things available at conventions. And that was a good thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's still new to Australia. We just maybe have some catching up to do.
Well, I was about to say, if there was going to be any part of the world that decided, you know what, we've got diversity covered, that would be San Francisco. I'm not surprised that they decided we don't need this anymore. So maybe rather than closing up shop, they should be moving the convention to other parts of the world where there's still a little bit of a lack of diversity and equality.
We'll have to get them down here.
Yeah.
I'll have to invite them. Matt Conn, but that is a good sign. Listening, come on down under. We would love you to tell us how to do it.
Yes.
And I, without sounding, what's that horrible word, imperialist or anything, not being imperialist, but just being like globally reaching out. Mm-hmm. And if people can share their skills and experiences, I don't care what country they come from. Doesn't matter to me.
Nope.
It shouldn't matter to me.
Nope.
Or any of us.
Shouldn't matter to anyone.
That's right. Okay. So who inspires you? And I also want a message from you to any young and old geek girls out there for the future.
Who inspires me?
Well, what inspires
you? In what
you?
Regard?
As far as, well, it wasn't the questions. As far as what sort of things inspire you to be the geek that you are?
It's funny. I saw this question because you sent this to me to have a look. This is going to sound really weird, but I don't actually think I have a particular sort of role model or something that's inspired me. It's more sheer determination and stubbornness. So when I was younger and thought of myself as a geek, I there was a lot of resistance from
yourself.
From myself, from like certain family members and friends and just people in general that are like, oh, are you sure you don't want to, you know, like go and play with this doll instead or watch this kind of movie or do this? Why would you want to do that? And I am so damn stubborn that I think that's my own stubbornness and ambition and desire to be myself no matter what and really not care what anyone else thinks has driven me more than anything. And I'm the kind of person that the more barriers are put in my way, the harder I will push to get through them. So the whole idea of, you know, gender inequality within geek culture, which I think on one hand is still an issue and on the other hand is really not so much an issue. It's only made me more inspired to work in the geek industry and to get my voice out there. And so, I don't know, I'm just sort of driven by my own steam. I think about it and I can't think of anyone I look up to or anyone that I'm trying to emulate.
Everybody has their different,
just where I'm coming from. I mean, I'm inspired.
So you make yourself do it.
Yeah,
So if someone says, you know, you can't do that, is that the reason
exactly,
you do it?
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
But is that the only reason you do it?
No, of course not. I mean, I certainly wouldn't build my whole life around something that wasn't actually a part of who I am.
You might as well throw a dice. Have you heard about that? Dice Man?
Dice Man.
It's a book about a guy who spent a year and he just basically would ask questions and he would throw a dice and whatever it landed on, that's what he would do.
Right.
So he died. No. But anyway, it's don't do that.
Not like that at all. You know, I feel that I really am a true geek at heart. And in terms of just being inspired, well, actually, I have to say, particularly in terms of representation of female characters, I do really enjoy the work of Joss Whedon. I know that that's not going to cut this. He's got plenty of, you know, fans, particularly his work. Like when I first watched Buffy all the way through, like solidly just sat there and watched it from season one right through to the end, I realized what an absolutely fantastic job he'd done in my opinion at representing female characters. And I felt like at the time when Buffy came out, that was really rare. Wasn't happening very much. And even today, like since Buffy, I can't think of any other really great examples of women, anyone creating these really great, strong female characters. I think what I loved about Buffy the most is that she's strong, she's a leader, she's very kick-ass, but she's also feminine. She doesn't have to be masculine as a woman to be strong. She can be feminine and girly, and she's worried about what her hair looks like and her lipstick, but at the same time, she's the one that they all look up to. She leads the pack, she protects them, and I just...
Because originally for the film, the Buffy film itself, she was basically a bit of a sports nerd.
Yeah, she was a bit of a tomboy.
Actually, so she was the popular type of character, or popular type of girl. So it was interesting how that morphed into somebody who became the instigator for many changes, the leader, the saviour in a way. It was quite a twist, and that was interesting. And it was so accessible and commercially viable.
Yep.
As probably no other television series, English-speaking television series, I think.
Yeah. And just generally, I mean, Whedon's treatment of male and female characters, character development in anything he does is just fantastic.
Most of the time.
Yeah, I really enjoy his work. So, yeah. So that's probably about it.
Okay, cool.
Oh, and message to...
Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Geek girls. I don't know. I don't know whether there are any geek girls out there who still feel resistance the way that I did, or feel that there's pressure on them to be more traditionally girly.
Conform.
Or conform. But I guess all I would say is just don't. Screw them. You know? I don't know. Damn the man. Not necessarily like as in a man. It could be a woman. You know, just damn the man, metaphorically speaking. Yeah, follow your own passion. I mean, when you do that, when you actually embrace what you're passionate about, everything suddenly falls into place, I find. You suddenly find yourself surrounded by people who share the same kind of passion. Opportunities start to present themselves to you. You just start to enjoy life more. Just don't pretend that you're something that you're not. Just be who you are. And if you're confident in that and you just continue to do that, people will respect you no matter what. Like, even the people who are really anti-nerds or geek culture, they'll see that you really don't care, and you're being yourself and you're doing whatever you want. And I would say that to any geek, not just girl geeks. But as far as like girl geeks specifically are concerned, and the whole issue of misogyny and geek culture, I would just say what I said in my article is that don't stop talking about it. If you feel that there's an issue, don't be silenced because you feel like you don't want to be the unpopular girl, or you don't want to be the one that people don't really want to hang around with anymore because you bring up issues that, you know, they just don't want to think about.
Yeah,
don't stop talking about it, because things won't ever change unless we, not to sound cliche, but we have to be the change that we want to see in the world. And if we stop talking about it and just kind of, you know, feel like you don't want to say it because you don't want to be the unpopular one, and you don't want any... Like, you don't want to be criticized.
Give it up. You're
obviously
not doing the right thing.
Yeah, just keep saying whatever you think needs to be said, and hate is going to hate. That's it. That's what
I think. All right, great. Now, where can people go to find out more about you and this new blog? And
that's just at geekmaven.com. So that's GEEKMAVEN, geekmaven.com. Otherwise, if that's not up and running by the time this goes out to the world, there's always emmabeddows.com, and there is always at emmabeddows on Twitter. So you can find me all over the interwebs.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for speaking
on
Geek Girl Speak.
Yeah, no worries.
Great.
It was great.
Dr. Emma Beddoes, thank you.
Hey, I'm Dr. Emma Beddoes. You're listening to Geek Girl Speak on Joy 94.9.
Excellent. Great.
All the geeky ladies. This is Maud Garrett, Chief Bomb of Geek Bomb. You can find us at geekbomb.net, but you are listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. All the geeky ladies. What?
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.